Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Paul Glastras, who is the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly magazine. From September 1998 to January 2001, he was special assistant and senior speechwriter to President Bill Clinton. And before joining the White House, he spent 10 years as a correspondent and editor at U.S. News & World Report. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Glastras.
Great to be here.
And the Washington Monthly has a cover article about the economic debate the candidates aren't having. Clearly, jobs are, and job creators, I guess, is the mantra on Romney's side. And the president, of course, is somewhat defensive because he hasn't been the miracle worker that the left expected of him and that the right are now castigating him for. Do you think his mistake, though, was earlier when he did not really go after the people who caused the devastation of the economy back in 2008? Because after all, it was the outrage over Wall Street that led to the foundation of the Tea Party, and they ran away with an issue that the Democratic Party left on the table.
Well, you know, he was on the horns of a dilemma back then. First, the prosecution of white-collar crime of this sort is immensely difficult and can take years to do. And my understanding is, finally, with some pressure from U.S. attorneys, state attorneys, that there are some efforts now to begin those prosecutions. But at the time, remember, I think the concern within the White House from people at the Treasury that I talked to was, you know, the House was on fire. The global economy was about to collapse. And the thing they needed to do was make sure the banking sector didn't take the economy down into the next Great Depression. So their number one focus was getting the banking sector from collapsing. And it was hard to do that and prosecute at the same time. And it was a thankless sort of thing. And it began, of course, with the bailout under President Bush in the fall of 2008. But then what the Obama administration did was very cleverly got the private sector to reinvest in the banks rather than the public having to put money in, and basically got the banks back on their feet and the economy beginning to create jobs a lot quicker than anyone thought was likely, and historically quicker and cheaper for the public than just about any similar kind of financial collapse in the past. So it was a heck of a feat, but politically, it was a disaster for him.
And of course, you have to add to that the fact that the bankers who he rescued are now giving all their money to Mitt Romney.
That's right, right. That's, you know, no good deed goes unpunished, right? I mean, he had the audacity to actually blame the bankers whose hides he was saving for having caused the problem, and the bankers got their took a great umbrage at this. And he bailed them out and ticked off the public and then pointed out the facts of what the bankers did and then ticked them off too.
Well, in the Washington Monthly, Paul Glastras, the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly magazine, we're talking about the current issue that talks about the economic debate the candidates aren't having. You point out that the lack of jobs didn't cause the financial crisis. But what's really the albatross, if you will, around Clinton's neck and the American people's neck, if you will, is that the average family's wealth has declined 40% since 2007, according to the Federal Reserve. And it's worth noting that the 1% have done, you know, almost as well in the opposite direction in terms of the plus side of the ledger. So why doesn't the president then tell us that? I mean, why didn't he talk about that? The kind of kiss of death that to say how bad things are? I don't understand why you wouldn't really want to go back to this event that decimated the economy, the worst hit that's taken since the Great Depression. And it does at least tie into the narrative of the evisceration of the middle class, which I think it's starting to emerge, at least it seems to be, from the White House.
Well, I don't know why they wouldn't pick up on it. I think that there's probably a number of reasons, but let's just go back and agree. I think you rightly stated the thesis of our package of stories. Probably more than any other election that one can remember, this one seems to be about one thing, which is jobs, right? Everyone says that the jobs numbers between now and November will determine who wins. Almost everything that Obama and Romney say in terms of their policies, whether to cut taxes or raise them on the wealthy or whatever, are done in a way that argues that this will create jobs. But think about it this way: in 2007, well, imagine that we could have 4.6% unemployment, right? Well, 4.6 unemployment. If we could get down to 4.6% unemployment, it would be astonishing, considering where we are now. But 4.6% unemployment is what we had on the eve of the financial collapse, on the eve of the Great Recession. We had nearly full employment, and that didn't stop us from going into this collapse. So what was the cause of, or the precipitating cause anyway, of the fiscal collapse, financial collapse, was that the average American was already at that point tapped out. Levels of household debt had grown from 77% in 1990 to 127% by 2007, and savings rates had plummeted from 7% in that same period to zero. We had zero savings rate. And so what precipitated the Great Recession was people simply didn't have the savings or the money. People with jobs were not able to pay their mortgage. That's what did it. So getting back to 4.6% unemployment, which would be a godsend, doesn't necessarily get us to the kind of sustainable growth that we are used to in this country. So what we're arguing is that what we need to do is and as you said, since the Great Recession, the average American has lost 40% of their savings, of their net wealth, largely in housing values. So we need to figure out ways of helping the average person save money for college, for retirement, to get them over a hump of unemployment, to be able to relocate to where the jobs are, to avoid bankruptcy and spinning out of control that happens to people's finances when they don't have a little savings. And let's go back to the Depression, Ian. We all think of the New Deal and what great things it did for the American people, and it certainly did in terms of putting people to work and building infrastructure that we're still using today. But it didn't lead to sustained economic growth. What led to sustained economic growth was what happened during World War II, and two things happened during World War II. First, we really did a stimulus bigger than anything FDR had done before that. Essentially, everyone who wanted work could have it, and people's incomes grew tremendously because of they had more and more hours of work. But B, they had nothing to spend the money on because of rationing, because of price controls. The store shelves were bereft. People could only spend so much. And also out of patriotism, they saved their money. They bought war bonds for several years. Well, at the end of the Depression, end of World War II, people thought we might plunge back into a depression, but we didn't. We had the beginnings of what turned out to be a several decade-long post-war boom. And why? Because for the first time, the average American had savings. The average American was creditworthy. He could borrow money. He could tap that savings to buy a house, a car. It was on the backs of those assets that we created the post-war boom. So if we want to get back to those kinds of positive economic dynamics, we're just going to have to figure out ways of allowing people to do what people did in World War II, which is save more.
Again, I'm speaking with Paul Glastras, the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly magazine. He was a special assistant and senior speechwriter to President Bill Clinton, and prior to that spent 10 years as a correspondent and editor at U.S. News & World Report. Well, the IMF today, of course, came out with a report suggesting that by no means are we out of the woods vis-a-vis Europe, that shoe could drop, and that's always been something hovering over President Obama's re-election. You know, a lot of pundits have suggested that perhaps Angela Merkel controls his political fate more than Mitt Romney, and that's a shoe that still could drop. The other thing that the IMF warned about, of course, was the fiscal cliff that we're heading towards after the election. There is the sequester agreement that, interesting enough, if that were ultimately triggered, and I know that the Congress are going to work furiously to undo that, but it is the law. That could be an interesting change in Washington, actually forcing them to make decisions. That's all after the elections. Just in terms of the, again, because it's the election year and we tend to want to talk about this kind of stuff, in terms of teachable moments, there was a great teachable moment from a TED talk that an entrepreneur, Nick Hanauer, gave. He's the single biggest non-family investor in Amazon, very wealthy fellow who absolutely exploded the myth of the job creator. And he basically said that the wealthy businessmen don't create jobs. They only demand, only when people have money in their pockets and buy products that capitalists make, do you hire people. You don't hire them out of altruism, you hire them out of necessity. I've always thought this was a very, very powerful piece. And assuming that Mitt Romney survives the kind of vulture capitalist attacks on him now, still the president hasn't gone after this complete canard about the job creator.
Well, it you know, the president has been making a broader point that I think addresses what the gentleman, the entrepreneur, was saying and you're saying. And that is, what he'll say is, you know, we don't grow economies from the top down. That's what the Republicans believe. But what he believes is you grow economies from the middle out, that you have a strong middle class, strong grassroots, and you grow it out that way. And so what we have with, you know, the term job creator, right, is, you know, another brilliant Republican formulation that is a euphemism for wealthy, right? A job creator, they just redefine wealthy people as job creators. And, you know, certainly the money that wealthy people have can be invested in firms and so forth, and that's important. But, you know, the vast majority of small businesses are not financed by rich guys. They're financed by whoever the entrepreneur can get to put money in. That could be their brother and their parents and the local bank and their, you know, their friends and their credit cards. And we've seen in the current issue of the Washington Monthly, there's a story about the, you know, some fresh numbers that we've derived from federal data about the declining number of new startup businesses, especially in the last 10 years, but really going back 30 years. And, you know, what might be some of the sources of that decline? So when people don't have savings, this gets back to the issue of savings and wealth. When average people don't have savings, they can't invest in their own small businesses or in other people's small businesses. So, you know, and you know, the job creators that the Republicans talk about, they've done very well over the last 10 years, but they haven't created a lot of jobs.
Well, I guess if what's just happening now with the president, who seems to have turned around, and you know he was being criticized a lot by a lot of disappointed progressives and liberals who thought he had sort of wimped out in the face of really venomous attacks and constant attacks from the Republicans. It seems like he's asserting himself a little bit more on the campaign trail. So just in closing, do you think that we're going to have a stronger narrative if it gets back to the jobs issue, which is the big centerpiece, that he'll, you know, have a stronger narrative and perhaps educate us a little bit more about some of these realities that we've been talking about?
I mean, I think that's what we're seeing. I think since really September of last year, when I think he had a little bit better hand that he could play, and he felt it was, you know, he had the debt crisis behind him. The you know, the Republicans finally agreed to not shut down the government and downgrade our credit. He finally, that was a miserable position for him to be in, and there wasn't much he could have done about it. That was done, and suddenly, you know, he had the cards, and I think he's been playing them masterfully since then, and especially in recent weeks. So I think the answer is he is developing a narrative. There's still plenty of time between now and November. I don't think this is going to be a cakewalk of election. I think, you know, he's still uphill battle against expectations and a very, very, very weak economy. But I certainly see a better narrative being developed.
Well, Paul Glasrost, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Ian, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Paul Glastras, the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly magazine. He was a special assistant and senior speechwriter to President Bill Clinton, and before joining the White House was 10 years as correspondent and editor at U.S. News & World Report. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about some surreal news coming out of North Korea.
Got a nightlife, lost his day job. Pushing paper, swinging pendulums. Anything to serve a function or to occupy some time. You gotta earn this living.